Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Immigration Lawyers Association podcast entitled Marketing Your Immigration Practice. I'm JJ Area, AILA's Education Resources Associate, and it is my pleasure to introduce today's panel. The discussion leader for this podcast is Sheila Murthy from Baltimore, Maryland. Joining Sheila is Carl Schusterman from Los Angeles, California. At this time, I'd like to turn the podcast over to Sheila.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, JJ. Welcome. So today you have two old-timers, sorry, Carl, I didn't mean old, I mean wise-timers, joining me to share our ideas with you on marketing your immigration practice. Both Carl's and my website have been around since the mid-1990s, so we literally go back to the dark ages of the internet. And of course, you have the West Coast, East Coast, so you have a really good overview of what we would love to share, and we're so excited to be able to share some cool ideas with you all today, so thank you for making time. We both have many things that we share in common, but each of us brings in our own idiosyncrasies, whether it's to our work, to our practice, our philosophy, and so hopefully you'll get a nice range of ideas and ways to approach to market your practice. We both tend to focus on employment-based immigration, but even within that, there are variations within our practices inherently because of the size and the nature of our clients and the geographic jurisdictions where we practice, even though immigration law, of course, is nationwide. We hope that you will learn and, more important, actually enjoy our discussion with you today. If you go away with a few tips or even one good tip that will change something that you've been doing for ages, then AILA and we both would have been successful in our session today with you. With that, here's how we plan to break up the subtopics for you today. The first topic is the use of social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, blogging, etc. Carl's going to talk about that. Next, Carl will discuss the next bullet point on participating in non-immigrant and immigration, which is AILA lawyer events. Then next, I'll be speaking on speaking engagements, articles, community involvement, etc., and then continue the next bullet point with how to get paying clients. Then talk a little bit about cross-selling your immigration work in-firm for larger firms and out-of-firms for smaller firms. And then Carl is going to round it out with other interactive ways to market your practice. So with that, Carl, I'm going to open the floor for you to start the discussion so we can, you know, the way I look at it is I have Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and I do blogging, but I'm not as good as I need to be. And I know there are some lawyers who are fantastic with this. And I think, Carl, you fall closer to the fantastic compared to me. So I figured you would be most appropriate to discuss the use of social media.
Well, thank you, Sheila, for the compliment coming from you. It's a wonderful thing. Yes, I look at social media as proof that there may be an omnibenevolent God out there, because back in the 80s, in the 90s, I used to market by writing a lot of articles in ethnic newspapers, and it cost a fortune to do all of that. All of a sudden, we have things like Facebook, LinkedIn, blogging, Twitter. And they're all free. I mean, it's like almost, it's very difficult for me to believe that here is a free service and it doesn't just go out to one ethnic group in one particular city, but it goes out to everybody all around the world and you can track it, which is unbelievable. And you shouldn't forget about that if you're using social media. When we used to write an article in an ethnic newspaper, you know, we just sort of waited for people to call us and make appointments with us. And how did you hear about us? Oh, yes, I read the something daily. And, you know, but it wasn't very a good predictor of how many people you would reach with when I write something on Facebook, or I must say now that I'm in my mid-60s right now, I don't usually even write it. I usually see something online. I'm usually at home more than I'm in the office. And then I have assistants who are 22, 23 years old, and I send them a very quick email, and I just put SM, and they know that means social media. They post it on the social media, you know, usually on Facebook, because Facebook will synchronize with Twitter. I know one of the top AILA officers said, "Oh, Carl, I love your tweets. You know, I always retweet them." And I said to her, "Actually, I've never been on Twitter in my life, but when we post something on Facebook, it automatically puts it on Twitter." So when you put something out, of course, and I think for you younger people, you know, I'm saying something that is like, duh, of course, you know, but this is not just for socializing, this is for growing your practice as well. So you put something on, and you're able to see the reach of each post, like how many thousands of people is this going to. You're able to see whether people like it or not, because they can click the like button. You're able to see how many people share it. I'll tell you something funny. I mean, I've been using Facebook for years right now. I always thought I was doing pretty well. But a few weeks ago, at the beginning of this month, I was in Dilley, Texas, representing women and children that the Immigration Service has been detaining there. And I had people in the evenings like take my pictures with some of the women and children, and I talked about what was going on in Dilley. And I have to say that the amount of likes, the amount of people commenting, was about 10 times what it usually is when I post something like, you know, new immigration policy on this, or lawsuit means this, you know. And I thought, oh my God, that, you know, that personal touch, that really creates a lot of people being interested in what you have to say. And I'm still thinking about, how do we incorporate that into the things we put out every day? Yeah, I mean, just hundreds of people were liking it. I don't think I ever got more than about 12 people liking anything, Sheila. So it tells you something.
It's the personal connection. It's the emotional connection. People like the emotional touch that we're human and humane and caring, and we're doing cool things to help the world become a better place. When it's like, oh, okay, immigration, great. I can read up. I can do research. But, you know, I've rolled up my sleeves. I'm working to help people. So it's... You know, if you're a good human being, I think it can actually help to drive business. I think that's the motto here, that if people enjoy you as a human being, they're more likely, if they respect you and like you, to want to work with you and to engage your services and hire you as an immigration lawyer. Excellent, excellent point, Carl.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about that, but it was like a huge surprise to me. You know, in Dilley, we had to take our laptops with us, so I was able to... you know, post things on the social media while I was there, but I never expected that kind of response. Another thing, just, you know, technical things, if you see something, and believe me, I did this in Dilley every day, but if you see things that are engaging a lot of people, Facebook, very smartly on their part, has something which allows you to boost your post, so it goes out to thousands of more people than a regular post. And I mean, we're not talking about thousands of dollars, we're talking about maybe $20 to boost your post, and if you want to boost it again, it's usually like $5 or something like that. So you know, it's not huge amounts of money, but you're able to get to thousands of people all around the world. I know a lot of, and it's perfect for an immigration lawyer, because you know, if you did divorces or something like that, probably most of your clients would be in your community, and, you know, Facebook, you'd be reaching tons of people who are going to go to other family lawyers. But for immigration, you're going to countries all around the world, and, you know, I urge you to try to make friends in, you know, different communities, you know, because it'll be very good for your practice, and people want to be informed about these things.
Sure,
I'm going Yeah, I think I'll turn to our second bullet point, which is, participating in immigration and non-immigration events.
Before you do that, you didn't touch upon blogging. Is that something you don't do? I know
we do some
amount in our firm, and I enjoy it. And again, it's similar where you can share your personal perspectives or your experiences, your thoughts, and people either like you or don't like you for your viewpoints or your philosophy on life. And I think it's a great way to share your personal philosophy to see if clients can relate to you. So I know we do that at our firm, and Carl, I think you're doing it, and I know we need to move on to the next bullet, but if you just want to talk about it for 30 seconds.
Yeah, I did. Let me give a little plug for Greg, since he couldn't be here for our talk today. But when I woke up this morning, I know that there was a lawsuit filed about these, the October visa bulletin, and then 2 weeks later, the revised visa bulletin. And as we talk right now, it's September 30th, and the new visa bulletin goes into effect tomorrow, and nobody knows whether it's going to be the first one or the revised one. So just yesterday, I saw that a bunch of lawyers from Seattle and joined by Greg Siskin filed a lawsuit to force the government to go back to their first and more favorable visa bulletin. And they're asking for an injunction on this revised visa bulletin. And I thought, people are going to want to know about it. I certainly want to know about it because we have a lot of clients that are affected by this. Where would I find the answer? And I thought, why don't I look at Greg Siskin's blog? So that was the first thing I did after I woke up this morning. And sure enough, he said, I'm writing this on a plane as I'm heading from Tennessee to Seattle. And he talked about exactly what was going on. And when we finish this podcast out, I will be checking Greg's blog again to see what's going on and probably linking to it later today, because I think a lot of people need to know about that. But yeah, blogs are great because you can either write a lot or typically just write a little. I would always, people love photographs and pictures, so I would always urge you to, when you're putting something on Facebook or putting something on your blog, I always find it's more engaging if there is a picture with it instead of just words. I've been blogging for 6 or 7 years. I think it's good to blog on your page, but I think you also need a platform so that more people will see your blog. I know there's probably a dozen different pages that we post our blogs on. ILW for sure. A lot of your immigration attorney friends will read that. And guess what? Since most immigration firms are one or two lawyers, I think a lot of you, if you blog about a subject, people will see the content on it and see what your expertise is. And, if it's somebody from a different part of the country and they have a client that is in your part of the country, they might say, go to Jane or Jim because they're really experts on this particular subject. So
Thank you, Carl.
Thoughts out. Yeah, it's a good way to get out to other people. And anything to add to that, or should we go on to
I think we need to keep moving to our next
Okay. Hard for lawyers to do that, but I will go on to the second point. So we're talking about participating in immigration and non-immigration events. So I'll give you a couple examples. I mean, we already talked about Dilley, and there's also, I know tomorrow, one of the local members of Congress is doing a free clinic for people who really can't afford lawyers. So I always like to participate in those clinics. Of course, there's AILA conferences, talking at the local meetings, the state meetings, and of course the national conferences. That's always very helpful because hundreds of people will be in the room with you. Our state bar here in California, earlier this year, they started doing webinars, and Raj Iyer from my office and myself, this is going to be the third webinar. We're talking about immigration for healthcare workers in the United States, doctors, nurses, and so on. And they're great because they stay online. The State Bar makes it available to other people in the international law section. And I should say in California, it's really great. Those of you who are listening from California, there's no immigration law section in the California State Bar, but there's an international law section. So when you put out these webinars, instead of just going to other immigration attorneys, it's going to a lot of business attorneys who work in the international sphere, and they might represent companies that need immigration help. So it's kind of a double whammy there.
That's interesting.
Sheila, yeah, you know, I think the internet, like I said, it's just an unbelievably good thing for immigration attorneys because it's kind of open. Whatever we have to say, whether it's in a seminar, a webinar, a social media, whatever it is, the internet allows us to reach people all over the world instead of just, you know, Sheila's not just talking to people in Baltimore and I'm not just talking to people in Los Angeles. We're talking to people all over the U.S. and frankly in other countries all around the world.
And that makes our work so much more fun and exciting and thrilling, because you really feel you're part of this global village helping people with events. Carl, should I continue with the next bullet point?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okie dokie. So the next bullet point is the speaking engagements, articles, community involvement, etc. Community involvement, my philosophy is that we need to really enjoy or ideally love what we're doing. And you're not just doing it to get clients, though, of course, that is hopefully the byproduct for almost anything that we're doing, connecting with how to market your immigration practice and get more clients. A little bit of the chicken and the egg here. My philosophy is that if we love what we do, then it will show in all of our interactions and the passion and the commitment and the involvement that we have, whether with a particular organization or with people. And for example, right now, you know, it's clear both Carl and I enjoy the idea of mentoring and helping other attorneys so that they can become happier and more successful with their practice. And so when you feel a certain positive energy and vibration, you're more likely to put in more excitement and passion and commitment to making sure that it's more successful. Other things, for example, that I love, I enjoy the idea of being more active in the business community, helping businesses to succeed. So right now, for example, I'm the chairman of the board or chairwoman of the board of directors of the Maryland State Chamber of Commerce, and the idea of helping to lobby for more pro-business friendly laws and regulations, similar to what we do in AILA and AIC, to lobby for stronger, more pro-business immigration work. And because I enjoy helping others to succeed and helping to expand and create jobs, then byproduct of that, because a lot of people that are members of the chamber hopefully are businesses that at least a few of them have global businesses, like Carl was talking about, the lawyer, you know, the general law in the state organization. And so those businesses then hopefully will sponsor companies or know others that need to sponsor individuals through their companies and businesses to bring them into the U.S., whether it's on the H visa or the L visa, et cetera. So this whole thing with community work and articles and all of this, I always we can compare it to growing, for example, an apple tree. You till the soil, you fertilize it, you water it, you sprinkle the seeds, and then sometimes you have to wait, and for years at times. But when the apples will hopefully start yielding fruit, they will keep yielding fruit year after year after year with a whole lot less effort and time and energy being expended, because you've done what it takes to get known within your community, whether locally, regionally, statewide, or nationwide, thanks to all of the technology and Facebook and LinkedIn blog and everything that Carl just discussed. So pick what you enjoy doing and work in that. Regarding speaking engagements, again, you know, if you enjoy speaking and you're a subject matter expert in a particular area or sub-area, then an organization like AILA that Carl just mentioned is fine. But sometimes if you just speak on, for example, H or L, you may have 4,000 or 5,000 or 13,000 of your colleagues in AILA all being able to speak on that particular subject. So if there's a way that you can actually focus on a less common topic, and for example, at our firm, we found that we have a couple of attorneys that focus and work a lot in representing employers on enforcement-related issues when they're being investigated, when the ICE agent comes in and knocks on your company's door. And there's very few lawyers so far that really are comfortable in guiding employers and companies on what are your options and what to do. We have actually received referrals from AILA attorneys from across the U.S. in that area on enforcement-related issues for companies. So while being a subject matter expert in HRL is great, if you have thousands of other people in that area, it's less likely to yield you as much, as many fruits. So other organizations that we that I would recommend speaking on U.S. immigration law, for example, would be HR-related conferences, because you have for example, the state, the SHRM, the State Human Resource Managers Organization, or the National Organization for HR Folks, because many of the HR people are likely to hire or make decisions or recommendations to their companies about hiring the immigration lawyers for their companies or businesses. So that's a great area. And a subtopic, or even if you have other areas, if it's not immigration, supposing you love immigration, but then you also, let's say, enjoy, I don't know, motivation talk or inspiring others to do their best, go ahead and do it, but try to pick organizations like SHRM or HR organizations, because during the introduction and otherwise, you can continue to focus on yourself as the immigration person that has got your name and fame through the immigration law arena. And so I've actually, for example, been paid, I think, fairly handsomely for one-hour keynotes at national conferences. And even though some of it is not directly immigration law topics, you can weave it into your discussion about why you like motivating people or what have you. Moving on to writing articles. If you enjoy writing articles, then absolutely do so. Again, pick topics and organizations where you choose to publish, where you think that you will likely to get more business. Most articles need to be in simple language and understandable by the common person, whether it's the HR folks you're trying to target or individuals or others in the company, whether it's the technology, the chief technology officer at a company that might make a decision about hiring an immigration lawyer, because the goal and the idea is that they think of us when they think of hiring an attorney for their foreign nationals processing under immigration law. So if you don't enjoy writing articles and you prefer public speaking, then focus your time and energy on what you enjoy doing. At the end of the day, one's interests, strengths, passion, and care will always speak louder than the words that we speak or write about. And, you know, I always think of Ralph Waldo Emerson's words, "What you are is shouting so loudly at you that I cannot hear what you are saying." In other words, the trust factor of who we are will make us shine and attract clients to us. And our trust is, in fact, the most important factor that we can offer to clients or potential clients or existing clients. And it sort of ties in with the whole ethical arena and ethical issues, because trust and ethics are sort of woven one into the other, where people enjoy, as we talked earlier, if you love somebody and you respect somebody, you're more likely wanting to work with that person and engage them on a professional basis. Subject matter knowledge and expertise is important, but trust and likability are absolutely part of the equation. Moving on to the next bullet point, how to get paying clients. We really need to determine who are our pro bono clients. It should not be the decision of the client, but your decision on who you decide to work on as a pro bono client and who needs to pay for our knowledge, for our time, for our creativity, etc. And like with most of life, our own beliefs, our self-esteem, and our self-worth will determine whether we are comfortable asking a client for money and how to ask for it at the different points along the immigration journey where you decide to ask and the modus in which you pick. And you really need to feel comfortable and okay about it. and about getting paid for your time and services. You should value your time and your worth. Obviously, we need to be fair and reasonable. And most important is that we communicate, whether it's our rates or our policies, so that there is no surprise factor with the client when they get our bill or the invoice. So again, trust your own comfort, and subtle cues will get picked up by our clients and prospective clients. So whether we choose the flat fee basis or an hourly rate, and how you come up with the formula for, you know, the rate itself that you determine, you should feel comfortable, you should speak confidently, and point out the value that you provide to the client. Of course, the types of cases or clients and their own financial ability may determine the ranges that we can each ask for in good faith and expect to get paid by our clients. When a common thing that people often say is, if you're asked in a party or social get-together for, hey, Carl, hey, Sheila, hey, whoever, you know, can I get some free advice since I hear that you're an immigration lawyer? Ensure that you can schedule a time with that person by phone or in person with your office, give them the information, and tell them to, and inform them to feel free to take advantage of the fabulous website that your law firm has, which has oodles and oodles of free information and advice and articles and blogs and, you know, forum or questions and answers that they can rely on. My belief and philosophy is that in reality, most people will respect a person who quotes a fee, provides valuable service, schedules a time because you respect yourself and the client to give them undivided attention during that 20-minute or 30-minute or 1 hour, whatever your policy is for scheduling your appointments. And of course, in life, you can remind the person that you get, you know, you get what you pay for. And so you, you know, if someone demands free advice, you can tell them, you know, this is how you prefer to do it because you respect the client and yourself. Ultimately, your self-perception will determine your success. And like with most of life, what your mind can conceive and believe, it will achieve. So with that, let's go to the next bullet point with cross-selling immigration work in firm for larger firms and outside the firm. So depending on if you obviously have a very large firm with different teams and departments within the within your own law firm, a lot of law firms tend not to market within and promote as much within their own teams, and some law firms actually give brownie points to their associates and their partners for referring work and cross-referrals, because sometimes, in the example that Carl just gave, the big in-house corporate or business lawyer may not be focusing and marketing the immigration team to their company, and then the company ends up using somebody outside. So you want to be sure that you are continuously marketing within your own firm, if you're in a larger firm, to remind your anyone in areas that are likely to come across clients that need immigration services to keep your immigration, yourself or your immigration team in mind for referrals. And in smaller firms, obviously, some small firms have create little teams or little organizations where they cross-refer work within a certain subgroup or subset to help each other. I don't know, Carl, if you want to add anything to either that bullet point and then roll on to your next bullet point about interactive ways to market your practice, other ways to market your practice and cross-sell.
Yeah, I did. You know, some of the ways that end up marketing your practice may not be readily apparent. They may not be like social media or something like that. And I thought I'd just mention two or three things from my own experience where I just kind of fell into something, and then it turned out to be kind of a great strategy, but it didn't start off to be a strategy. I go out and give a lot of talks at different organizations where a lot of our clients are in the medical field. So I was talking at Kaplan, which does these test prep courses for people wanting to get a physician or nurse license in the U.S. And a few years ago, I did a Kaplan talk, And they actually had a film crew come in and videotape me, and then they distributed to their centers all over the place. And then somebody wrote to me on my webpage saying, why don't you, it was like a 45-minute video, why don't you split this up into different videos and put them on YouTube? And you know, that was like the farthest thing from my mind. To me, YouTube was something that 60s rock bands, and just because I'm older, but Lady Gaga and everything, you know, people by the millions watched them. I thought, well, who the hell would want to watch Carl Schusterman talk about how to get J waivers for physicians? That, you know, I mean, what could be more boring? But I did that. I took the guy's advice, and I had bought my wife a Mac, so I had these one-on-one classes where they taught me how to do videos, and I just split up the existing video about physicians into about 8 videos. And since that time, that's about 6 years ago, we've probably put out about 60 videos on different subjects. I embed the videos into the proper pages on my website. So, if, you know, if that's the H1 video, will be on the H1 page and so on. And guess what? As we're making this podcast, I'm almost up to a million views on my videos, which is not going to keep Lady Gaga up at night worrying about that. But, you know, for, you know, a boring guy sitting there in a suit and tie and talking about immigration law, you know, a million people is fantastic. And, you know, you don't have to do it over and over again. You just pick a particular topic, talk about it. And, you know, until the law changes on that, people will just keep watching it. Another example.
Well, I have to respectfully disagree with your boring person definition of yourself. I would not call you boring. I think all immigration lawyers are so exciting and compassionate and caring because we love helping people and changing clients' lives, and you have been a front runner. So it sounds like here we're in this rah-rah club where we have this huge mutual respect and admiration for each other and our colleagues in the immigration
okay.
bar.
Well, I'll take the compliment, especially from you, Sheila. Let me talk about another thing that way back when, I mean, Sheila already told you, you know, that I'm an old guy. In the 70s, I actually worked for the INS, and somebody called up out of the blue. He was a citizenship teacher and wanted a volunteer attorney. Back then, attorneys used to do the interviews for citizens to come out to the class, and nobody in my branch of the Immigration Service wanted to go, and I was a new guy. And I asked the boss, well, could I go? And he looked at me like, what do you know, Carl, about citizenship? But anyway, I talked him into it. And after a little while, we got so much interest that within a year or two, I had lined up about 50 to 100 schools that I had volunteers go out to those schools. And then I started thinking about, well, what would give them even more value? So I started having the local congressional aide come with me and talking a little bit and handing out some cards. And, you know, when I left the Immigration Service, my whole project fell apart, unfortunately. But I had made friends in all these congressional offices. They started renting rooms in the federal building. Every time the, you know, the 86 law, the 90 law, the 96 law came out, I would do a seminar for the congressional aides, and really ended up with like big Hollywood stars and all sorts of interesting clients, because the congressional people would always call me to get my opinion on things. And that's a segue to something else that I also wanted to mention. You know, if you put out good content in whichever way, speaking, writing, social media, whatever, eventually people, if they like your content, they'll hear about you and you'll become an authority on something, and reporters will call you. And, you know, I think a lot of immigration attorneys don't think about that, but it's really good to know the reporters. Take a look at the New York Times today, and you'll see Julia Preston has a very, very interesting front page immigration article. But I remember a few years ago, just sort of out of the blue, somebody from, it was a Thai family, was referred to me. They had lived in the U.S. for over 30 years. They had applied for citizenship. They were permanent residents, and they had applied for citizenship, and somehow they could never get it. And then all of a sudden they got notice to appears that they were all going to be in deportation proceedings. And basically, without boring you about the story, the problem was that the Immigration Service had issued their cards incorrectly over 30 years ago, and it wasn't their fault. It was the immigration's fault, and they were going to deport him. So I wrote a letter to our local district director saying, this would be terrible, and it would make you guys look really, really bad. I mean, the boys were 3 and 10 years old, and they were with their mother, and now they were in their 40s and graduates of UCLA and so on with professional jobs. I said, you want to deport these people? I mean, they don't even speak the language of their native country. And the immigration guy sent me a letter saying, I'll let the judge figure it out. So I went to one of these reporters who had quoted me over and over again in her articles, and she thought it was a terrific story. So they went and took pictures of these people. She worked for the Associated Press. The next morning, I was sitting there at the internet just typing in their names on Google, and within an hour, over 250 papers across the country had put her article on their papers. And I got a call when I got into work from immigration saying, oh, you know, Carl, we changed our mind. We're going to naturalize them. So things you would never think of. It's not only something to grow your practice, but it's something that you can use to help your clients. And I think that's what this is all about. The two
Absolutely.
Things do go hand in hand.
Yeah, very good points. Very good points. I know we have to be mindful of the time, and I think we're crossed our 30 minutes, but it was supposed to be somewhere between 30 and 40, and we're coming pretty close to our 40 minutes. But this was absolutely fun. I enjoyed hearing and listening to your stories and experience and examples. And I think you hit the nail on the head is when a lot of times when reporters or news media calls and we're busy trying to get something done with a deadline, take that extra few minutes to respond or call the person back, because you never know where the dots join and what this classic fabulous story that Carl just shared with us on how that family's life changed forever. It got him even more well known, and his just grew his practice by leaps and bounds, because now he's the go-to person for so many people in the media. And similarly, I think I've had a few lucky breaks, and same thing, good website, good content, reliable stuff. And I had a fabulous featured article in the New York Times, and I couldn't believe that happened, I think a couple of years ago. And all of that is because you take the time to do things and invest, and you gain credibility. So I would say go forth and achieve the most that your mind will allow, and push your dreams a bit farther. If that's what you want from your life and from your immigration practice, to be amazing and successful and awesome, I hope that with Carl and myself, Sheila Murthy, sharing some great ideas with you all today, that you will be able to keep some of these ideas in mind and think about this when you think of marketing your immigration practice. Thank you for making time to join us both today. This concludes our podcast.